Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to What the Flock. I am your host, Pretty Bird. This is a Team of Voices radio here on Blog Talk, and you can find us, a humble little group, on allpoetry.com, the world's largest poetry website. I made a tweet to join, so feel free to check it out and come look us up at a Team of Voices. And tonight, we are all about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The lovely, tiny little book by
Robert Louis Stevenson.
Forgot that for a second. That's shame on me. And it is probably the smallest, best book I've ever read. I first read it when I had to read it in high school. It's like 136 pages. Like, it's like 4.5 inches wide. Like, it's a tiny little book. But it is this beautiful, eloquently written tale of transformation. And the thing is, the best part about this book for moi is it doesn't actually say anything. It alludes to this. It gives you hints of that. It gives you shadows in a doorway. It gives you little replacements of time, and your mind fills it all in. And I find that to be beautiful. And it's just written in the way things were written back then, with the beautiful elegance of language that you don't find nowadays, because everything's pretty much straightforward and in your face. And so it's just lovely for me all around. It's dark, it's a little twisted, and I figured, what a wonderful welcome to spooky season, because I love spooky season. And so let's talk a little evil, a little lack of turpitude, which you never really hear outside of, you know, the whole, if you're morally, anyway, it's a little whatever. What would you do if you really didn't worry about consequences, if it didn't matter, if you take emotions, your emotions, how you treat people, their emotions out of the equations, who might you be if there were no consequences for your actions. You didn't care what they were, not if there were none, but, you know, just if you gave, like, if it was all a true zero craps day. So before we get into all the good stuff, let's say hello to our fabulous guests, or callers, or friends, or whatever you want to call them. I would say all three, so trifecta is fabulous. Let's say hello to Rack and Tor.
What the flock was that?
That was a crappy introduction is what that was. And hello to Mr. A.P. Taylor.
Hello, pretty good.
Hello, hello. And with us tonight, we have Miss Allie Sunshine. Say hi.
Hello. It's nice to be back.
It's nice to have you. I don't know if I've ever had you on my show. So I'm all excited. And so I know, AP, you're in a rush. So let me know when you're ready, and I will throw you up, and we will kick it off with a bang.
I am off the highway in the mobile office in a side street. The car is on, but I am stopped. And so the parking brake is on, so all is good.
You are awesome. So glad you are safe and could join us. What a treat. I'm so excited. And you are on the board, my friend.
Yes. Thank you very much. It's the mobile office here, the Audi A4. And this is being Jekyll, a villanelle, because everything I write at the minute seems to turn into a villanelle. And it goes a little bit like this. When there are troubles near beside, then the person involved will change, as can run, but helps not to hide. For often a challenge is found wide, many items need rearrange, when there are troubles near beside. Nothing's simple, many confide, results can be hidden or strange, as can run, but helps not to hide. Because at the base something's fried, maybe grilled was instead the range, when there are troubles near beside. Then realize others will deride, before in a single interchange, as can run, but helps not to hide. Moral is, position decide, stick to your guns even if strange, when there are troubles near beside, as can run, but helps not to hide. End pump.
You know, that is just fabulous, and that is absolutely just you. How wonderful is that? I mean, it never occurred to me to be like, well, I'm just Jekyll and we're good, you know, because my mind really never went there. And I think that this is absolutely wonderful and true. You know, it's what good comes from being Mr. Hyde, really. I mean, he's the opposite of good. I mean, at the end, you have to deal with it when you're back to yourself anyway, so it's not really worth the trouble, you know. And I'm like, and how often do we see people acting a fool, whether they've drunken that magic elixir or they're just in a mood, or that's just who they are, unfortunately, because that happens. And we're like, yeah, no, I can't be that person. That's not okay, you know. And better to just face it, go through it, be done with whatever situation it is, move on, and be able to look at yourself in the mirror, because I'm sure we've all had those moments where we wake up the next day and be like, tell me that didn't actually happen. And that happens to me perfectly sober, which is god-awful, let me tell you. Because I don't drink. But, it's not that I haven't drank or that I'm not drinking because I'm, you know, whatever. But I don't drink because I have my father's an alcoholic. It's in my family. I'm very much afraid of the gene. So I tend to not drink. But, you know, you wake up the next day and you're having a good time and things, and you're in a crowd of people and whatever it is. And then all of a sudden you wake up the next morning and you're just like, no. And like you search through your phone for pictures or texts or weird things. You're like, oh, yeah, all right, well, sucks to be you or sucks to be me or whatever. And, you know, because we all have to live the consequences of our actions. And I think it's very interesting that outside of any kind of mood-altering substances, joy is probably the most natural lack of inhibition, because when you're happy, you will just be a what you don't care. It's not that you don't care. It's just you're in that zone of your euphoria, and then you tend to go outside of your comfort zone without even realizing, and you're having a good time. Then when you're back to your senses, you're like, yeah, alrighty then. Don't know who that was, but we're good. And I find that to be interesting that, you know, joy is very much a natural high, obviously, because, high is high. But, you know, but it will take you outside of yourself just as much as any other substance. Unfortunately, joy tends to be fleeting. So, you know, take that for what it is. But I love this. I am thrilled with your choice. And, you know, I like villanelles. I do. Because, A, they're not the easiest thing to do to make it all make sense, to pull it through with that particular line order and rhyme scheme. And but there's kind of music to it, you know? It's very lyrical, which I just love. So, Raconteur, what are your thoughts?
You got my head spinning with all kinds of comments. You're talking about villanelles, and I want to make architecture quips about villas versus other types of structures. there is an elegance to it, though, and it really enforces what you, the point that you're making about, you know, at least what I saw as you know, it helps not to hide, you know, pointing out that it's kind of a choice, and you know, also pretty bird when you mentioned you know, acting the fool without drinking the liquid. Yeah, I was jumping up and down. But anyway, yeah, guilty. What is it that they say? If it looks familiar to you, it must be because you recognize it for some reason or something like that. Anyway, I loved the flow of the piece, and you know, anytime you know someone does a form, it kind of makes me a little jealous because I haven't really learned any of them, and you know, I know it's just a question of like, you know, looking up the bits and pieces of it, but when it's done well, which obviously you do an amazing job with them, it's kind of envious. You know, it really shows some of what the language can really do. You know, it highlights the form, how am I trying to say? I don't know. I don't know. It's a beautiful
okay,
way of making. No, I'm not. Like, I don't know. I think I'm having a stroke over here. I did appreciate it though, AP. You know, I love the form. I love what you think. And yeah, it helps not to hide. That repetition, it was lovely, and again hammered home a beautiful thought.
Thank you. Thanks, Rick.
That it did. And Allie, what are your thoughts?
I kind of have to echo what Rack was saying at first and say that the fact that somebody can write in this style is mind-blowing to me because although I have to go in my own unique way of writing my poems, I've never seen a poem done in this order, and it's actually really cool. And I said, I like how you say to stick to your morals even if trouble is going on, because I think if I was not stuck to my morals in a sticky situation, things would go very wrong very quickly.
Yes.
Overall,
yeah.
It was an amazing ride.
Thanks, Sally. Thank you.
So before you run off and continue your journey, AP, what are your thoughts on Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, either in theory or the book?
I actually really love the book, and I agree with you. And you were saying how subtle it is, and that things are inferenced, not, you know, you don't have bloody weapons all over the page. You have an inference all the time of what's gone on. And there's something really beautiful about writing that uses inference in that way, but yet still build to something as scary and dark as that book.
Absolutely. There's a grace in it that I think is lost in a lot of modern writing because You know, I like a good suspense thriller where it makes you think, it makes your mind go, it makes you go to all these places because, mm-hmm. for me at least, and I'm invariably darker than you know, what is on the page. And so it really, it builds up. And I don't think I've ever picked that book, and I've read it many times, I don't think I've ever picked that book up and not read it straight through like this. You know, I mean, it's not a very long book, so it's not a hard thing to do.
Not.
But as soon as I pick it up, you know, you just don't want to put it down. It's I love that book. Awesome.
Yeah, and there's something about doing that too. So I'm actually up to Singapore tomorrow, Pretty Bird, and my task is to write 15,000 words of my novel, which I'm 20,000 words through as we speak. So. That's all I'm doing in Singapore is writing a novel, I'll go to Singapore as many times as it takes to write it. So.
You know, talk about making a space to be creative. That is amazing. I hope you write 50,000 or 15,000 plus because that's fabulous. And you must let us know when it's done so we can all buy it.
Yeah. Look, it's good fun. And I'm going to a beautiful place in Singapore, the Shangri-La, which is one of the most beautiful hotels in Singapore and a beautiful space. So I'm hoping it
Lovely.
Will inspire me to write appropriately. Yes.
Ah, what a beautiful muse. And I hope you have a wonderful time writing and your creative juices are flowing. And thank you so much for sharing time with us and bringing your fabulous poem.
No, great pleasure. Great pleasure, and have a great show.
We will
talk the next week from Singapore.
Absolutely. Have a good time. Bye, Evie. Thanks again.
Okay, bye, everybody. Bye.
Take care.
So I have a few quotes from the book because I love this book. It is just here and there and everywhere in all of its shadowy, flouncy words. And if I'm reading a book, it's not a book.
No, you said it's just here, and I said that's not from the book. Never mind. Ignore me.
Oh.
You know better.
Well, you know, I can do that when we're not on the show.
yes.
But so there is a line of the guy that I can never remember his name, but he is looking for Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde or both of them. There's a whole to-do going on. And he's all like, well, if he be Mr. Hyde, he had thought. I shall be Mr. Seek. And I loved that phrase because he was determined to get to the bottom of it, but he wasn't all, you know, even old-timey gumshoe about it. He was just really, there's an elegance in that thought because with a nice little turn of phrase there where, you know, he's going to, you know, like I said, get to the bottom of it. And I just love that little nuance. It's just fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. So one of my favorite quotes from this book is this idea. And this is a Dr. Jekyll quote. It's like, I learned to recognize the thorough and primitive duality of man. I saw that of the two natures that contended in the field of my consciousness, even if I could rightly be said to be either, it was only because I was radically both. And that is a universal truth. That's what it is to be human. You know, there is no Superman, like there is no all good all the time. And don't get me started on my thoughts on Superman, because I will go off for 2 hours on how the modern movies have ruined my superhero. Anywho, that aside, there is no all good all the time. And just like there's no pure evil in human nature, it's not all bad all the time. We're skewed one way or another, and that is dependent on mood, place, time, surroundings, perception. I mean, it's all, we ebb and flow like a floating amoeba all the time, every moment of every day. And that same mood that colors our reactions colors how we view the world. Somebody can go up to, okay, I'll give you an example of my stupidity. I was 17 years old, almost 18, and I was working at Fabric King, and I loved that job. When I tell you I love that job, I don't think you understand how much I love that job, because I was making all kinds of things, sewing this and crafting that and being all kinds of fabulous. I had graduated high school. I've been working this job, and I started part-time with working full-time. And I was there, I don't know, a year. And one of my friends had come in, and he was all like, do you think I could work here? I was like, I don't know. Why don't you go ask the owner? And he went to her, and he's like, I was having a day, because I tend to be moody, and her answer with a smile was, only if she ever quits. And I did not hear that as a joke, like I would never quit. I heard that like she didn't want me there, and I was across the place. I wasn't paying any attention really, but it stuck with me to the point that I went out and I got a different job. And I gave her my 2 weeks. I actually stayed there an extra month, but I gave her my 2 weeks, and she's like, I didn't know you were looking to leave. Well, I wasn't planning on it, but it didn't seem like you wanted me to be here. It's like, no, I didn't mean it like that. And this is why, these are the little things in my youth that make me over-clarify everything, as Mr. Raconteur can attest to. I say one thing, and if it can be completely misconstrued and not on purpose, I am clarifying it left and right like an idiot. And I'm like, it is not condescension. It is just clarity, I promise. Because you only make those mistakes a few times, you know, because there's pain involved. Anyway, so, you know, everything colors everything else. I don't even know where I was going with that. But now that story's out there. So what are your thoughts, Allie, on, like, what are your thoughts on Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Because I know that growing up, before I read the book, you know, there was cartoons and little movies and stuff, and Dr. Jekyll was always this brilliant doctor, and Mr. Hyde was always like this usually a big, beastly, monstrous kind of guy, and that's not how the book is. So I was a little shocked to find that he's diminutive. He's like short and gnarled a little bit, and he just... It reminds me, his description reminds me of Peter Pettigrew from Harry Potter, the one that was a rat, whoever was a rat. Like what his character looked like as a person, that's what the description of Mr. Hyde reminded me of. So it was just, you know, a little unsightly, a little, and of course he had this foul odor and his breath stunk and whatever, but it was just not this big evil monster. You wouldn't really notice him, you know what I mean? And so,
I actually read it twice because I had to read it for a college class I'm taking. And after I read it, I was like, you know what? There's still things that I want to figure out within it. So I reread it a second time, and I think I reached the conclusion that the person that you were just talking about, that reminds you of the rat from Harry Potter, almost seemed to me as the Grinch from The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, because of their foul breath and the way they looked and the way it was presented in the book. And it started out to me as, you know, it would be a simple story to read and comprehend, which then turned into this story with a darker side, which I was not fully expecting. But it brought out the darker side of me in the process of, you know, if I'm going to write something about this, I got to put something in that's not super duper bright, but not super duper dark at the same time, because, well, if anyone's heard me read my other poems, they're not always dark. But it was definitely an interesting and... definitely not a story that should be read right before you fall asleep.
Well, you know, and that's true. What I find most interesting about that fact is that the book itself is not inherently scary. If you just take the words on the page, it leads you into the shadows. It makes you see things in your own shadows. And it is our own fears, or our own, all the things that we shove to the side about ourselves just to be in everyday company, that wants to come out and take a peek. And it's very uncomfortable to notice all these little things that are depicted as evil in your own personality. And it's a very uncomfortable read, which I find fabulous, because you gotta love something that makes you feel something or think something, or
I mean it
makes you creep yourself out because your mind takes you to these places. And like I said, my head, I go to the darkest of the depths. I am in Banta Black nonsense of mind. I was going to look for a word that I can't say here in my mind. Well, you know what I'm trying to say. It just messes with your head. And I am really not PG-13 friendly in my real life. This show makes me notice that more every time. But I love that it takes you there, that it leads you down the alley and you can see things in the shadow and you think you see, but you don't see, but you think you know, but you don't know. But the thing is, when it gets to the point where they're putting things together and you know and you think you know and it can't be, but it is, I absolutely love that. But the brilliance of this book is, I mean, this was written back when laudanum was taken for the vapors, okay? Like, this was, everybody was high on something before they knew what high was. And so to have this be 100% relevant in did I talk about the song? I didn't even talk about the song, did I? Oh, for Pete's sake. I completely skipped the beginning of my gosh darn show. So let me go there, and then this will lead into what I was going to say. Okay, so this is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde was by The Who. It came out just before The Magic Bus in 1968, and it was written by their bassist, John Entwistle. I'm assuming that's how you pronounce that name. I have no clue. And about about Keith Moon, because his drunken escapades were a problem even in 1968. And I love how in the song it says, let me see, I have it here somewhere. I was actually prepared, and then I go off on tangents. My mind is just nuts. It says, whenever you're with me, make sure it's still me, you know? I could be the lovable fellow who'll buy you a drink, and then, or he'll be the lovable fellow who'll buy you a drink, and then when he's drunk, he'll change in a wink. And I love that because, you know, Dr. Jekyll mixes up this concoction of who knows how many fingers of whiskey that is, but he makes this concoction, and now he becomes the evil. He skews it in the wrong direction, himself, who's inherently good, and then makes him inherently bad. And what makes it bad, like, you know, and like I said, he's supposed to be pure evil, but what makes pure evil? And anyway, he's supposed to be pure evil. So how do you then remove the good? And then how do you live with those actions when you're back to yourself? And living with or growing up with people on varying spectrums of that unfortunate scale of crappy elixirs, some people get perfectly fabulous. Like, okay, I don't drink, but it's not like I've never drank. I mean, I'm old, you know, I've had moments. And so, but I am a very happy, on the four occasions I have been beyond tipsy. I've been like, can't walk, like off my ass drunk. Now I say can't walk, but I was, well, no, because that's ossification is when bone goes into it, but no. Why, you know how my brain is, Rap? Why are you doing that to me? You're throwing wrenches in the mix, yo. And I am very loving, because I tend to be a little dry, a little embittered. I'm, you know, I may be not so embittered on here, but let me tell you what, I vent all the time. If you read my stuff, I look like I am a crazy, crazy woman, either in the depths of darkness, in the throes of passion, I hate all people, which I don't actually hate all people, because hate takes way too much time and energy, and I am too lazy for that crap. But on those occasions that I have been quite inebriated, I am so freaking loving, and I don't mean like hoey loving. I mean, I'm just, I love everybody. Everybody is fabulous. People are great. The world is beautiful. And, so I'm not an angry drunk. I'm not an angry whatever. However, the fact that I am fully open and kind and loving freaks me out, because that's not who I am, you know? I am complimentary? I do. But I tend to be very straightforward. I don't tend to mince words. I'm a little off-putting in that way because people don't know what to do with that kind of honesty. So it does completely change me. It just doesn't make me evil. Now, I know people who, when they are, and tipsy aside, we're talking drunk, when they are drunk or depending on what high they are or whatever, then it's not pretty, you know? And people want to be all, it is, you know, I didn't mean it, but, you know, from the mouths of babes and drunk people, kind of comes the truth. Let's say hello to Miss Deborah Lee.
Deborah Lee.
Hello.
Hello. So
hey,
we are we are talking Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. We have Rack and Allie with us tonight. You just missed AP. He is on his way to Singapore tomorrow, so he's going to have a good time. But, you know, I was just going on a little tangent about how Dr. Jekyll's elixir is still relevant in that, you know, that elixir could very well be, you know, absinthe or whiskey or whatever the heck, and it changes people.
Tequila.
You know, tequila. It does. It can change people, and that is still relevant after however many hundreds of years that thing was written. That's probably not even that long. Who the heck knows? I have no clue. I should probably look that up. But how wonderful is that to write something so descriptive of a situation and have it not even resemble the situation but be exactly that situation? It's the magic of words. I absolutely love that. I do, I do, I do. So,
1886, doll.
Thank you. I was just going to look that up. So I wasn't wrong. And
It was a while ago.
It was. And, you know, when people didn't talk about such things, you know, all the faux pas of polite society that have been flown out the window. I wish some of those would come back. I miss when society was polite because people are just rude. And
We can
use a little politeness. You know,
I think after COVID, people forgot politeness. People forgot pride in their work. Oh, don't even get me started.
I was going to be all like, be careful, because nowadays, if you're friendly, people think you're flirting, which is an unfortunate.
Oh, that's always true.
She wants me.
Always, oh my goodness, you can't say you can't say anything nice to somebody without them being all like, well, hey, well, no. Anywho, that's a story for another time. So Deb, what are your I'm telling you, we could talk like 6 hours on that alone. So what are your thoughts on Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the story, the book, how the idea behind the book, whatever?
Well, you know, I think that, for one, I knew it was written a long time ago, but I didn't realize it was 1886. I mean, wow. So even more brilliant than I thought. But I totally agree in the concept. It might be the world's biggest metaphor for getting drunk.
Right.
Like, some people can sit back and have a beer and drink a beer all night and laugh and sing, but give them some whiskey and they turn into vicious little freaks. Or on a much smaller scale, you could drink some wine but then have some Sambuca and get the drunken blues.
Sambuca.
Yeah.
That's dangerous.
it sounded pretty specific, huh? But yeah, I totally agree that the concept of that, in my book, excuse to do what you want and find something to blame it on, you know?
Well, absolutely.
But it does change people.
You're right. It's for the better.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Love
doesn't it, though?
And dreams. and you know, but yeah, it's fascinating. I was intrigued when I read how you were spinning the hide, like, you know. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah,
oh, and by the way, on a side note, it's really good to hear you.
Well, you know, today talking isn't trying to kill me, so we're good. <You know? laughs> Yesterday was a different story, ask Rack. It was not okay. I went off on a tangent because somebody done pissed me off. And I was like, well, gosh darn it, I can't even vent anymore because my little thing beeps and I can't, you know, it's depressing is what it is. But I am okay. So I am here and happy to be here. But, you know, and I forgot what I was going to say. I said, I am so scatterbrained. It's not even funny. I know I had a thought, and it was a decent thought and a relevant thought, and now I have no clue what the heck it was. That's
what you were thinking about the opening song.
I think I said all I was going to say about that, and then we went into how that was written about Keith Moon and his drunken escapades and how, you know, that was a wonderful tie-in to, you know, the conversation that followed. So,
okay.
Yeah, so there was that. I was like, I know people – oh, I know what I was going to say. You know, there is this unfortunate way that people show regret in that, you know, I was drunk, so I didn't mean it. And the truth is, you kind of really mean the things you say. You may not mean them to sound as harsh or to come out in public, or, you know, you're not really aware of your surroundings because all of those inhibitions and all of those things go fly out the window. But it's there to some extent.
Right.
And so they're like, well, I didn't mean it. Well, you didn't mean it to fall out of your face in public, maybe. But, you know, out of mouths of babes and drunk people comes the unadulterated truth. And they're like, but the people that tend to always be apologizing refuse to see it that way, you know? And I'm just like,
yep.
Well, maybe yeah, you might want to either, you know, man up or drink less, you know? I mean, because how valid is an apology if they refuse to acknowledge that you know, it was even remotely valid, you know? Like, it's not that I think this, but, you know, I don't know. I just never found it really hard. And by hard, I mean, I can't live with myself with a lot of stupid things because my honesty level is neurotic. And I know who I am. It's fine. And, like, okay, if I do something, I don't tend to hurt people on purpose, but I am who I am, and I say things, and sometimes people take it wrong, and so I'm happy to apologize for that. But I'm always, if I know I'm wrong, I'm like, I had no clue, this, that, ask Rack. I'm constantly with the, if I'm wrong, I will tell you I'm wrong. Like, I'm so neurotic that I bought stuff from Elf, and they sent me somebody else's stuff on top of my stuff. And, like, a whole big old box of stuff. And I was on the phone with somebody. I was like, yeah, I can't. I have to call these people before they close. I couldn't touch it. Didn't want it. Needed to send it back. Had to. I couldn't keep it, you know? And they're like, well, we don't take back makeup, so Merry Christmas. I was like, woohoo! But I just, it wasn't mine, and it felt like stealing. And so I'm very, like I said, neurotic. And but that's okay. I'm good. And so
it's not worth the battle of the conscience. That's for sure.
Yeah, and my conscience doesn't ever whisper. It is very much screaming in my face. I mean, I will drive, you know, 5 miles out of my way to make a legal U-turn at 2 o'clock in the morning in the sticks where I live, where there ain't no cops. My town has no cops of its own, you know, and so it really, I can make a U-turn wherever I want to, and nobody would even see. There's no cameras. But no, I just cannot, because I'm very much, just because nobody sees you doesn't make it right.
I would
know. Well, there, you know, I'm very, like I said, neurotic.
Yeah.
I mean, people are like, I found $10. Okay, you can turn it in. They're like, no. I'm like, I can't take the wrong change from a cashier.
Right? Imagine how you would have felt if you did open that package and there was toys for a child in there. No, you know what I mean?
Oh,
not
exactly.
Worth it.
I had an Amazon package to my house. It was for some kid's birthday that I spent 2 hours going back and forth on the phone with Amazon. They ended up sending a second thing to the right address. but they got a hold of the person who ordered it and talked to them and said, and because they're like, well, this is the address you gave us, and the grandfather came to my house. He was three doors down, but they didn't know what the right address was because they had my address.
And she didn't want to have her birthday.
Yeah, I couldn't have this poor kid not have the gift. I mean, I had a big chunk of my day dealing with, I don't know if you, and so, but it was really, I just couldn't, I was like in the car picking up my kids, doing all kinds of stuff, and I'm like, nope, this kid's got to get his birthday present, you know? So I'm a little neurotic that way. You know, people want to think that I'm like all obnoxious because I can be, but I'm not. I'm actually really nice. I'm just hard around the edges. So, Miss Allie, are you ready to read?
Sure, I can read. I changed my poem a little bit, so if anybody peeked at it, they don't know what the most recent update is. But I'll explain the rest of it after I read. It's called The Magical Compass because when I started typing it, I forgot that the word was moral, so it became magical. If I had no moral compass within me, it would cause a different side of me to come out, a totally different side of me, a darker side of me and what I have been through, which is ever so slightly hinted at in this spooky piece. Without a moral compass, I would be crying every day. Without a moral compass, I would not be me. Without a moral compass, I would be more like a robot. I don't wish to be a robot. There's much inside of me, much that is valuable. If I did not have a moral compass, all the emotions that I deal with would be extremely overwhelming. I watched some people who did not have that much of a moral compass live. I saw how they handled the obstacles that they were thrown. I saw how they interacted with people around them. It was an eye-opening experience, to say the least. Seeing a drunk person laying on the couch demanding things was eye-opening. I will never forget the feelings I got each time I realized he was drunk or she was high yet again. I don't mean just simply drunk. I mean drunk to the point where they could not move, high to the point where they were almost dead. If I did not have a moral compass, I would not have survived my attempt, as I would not have had the strength, both mentally and physically, to navigate such a world-rocking event. If I did not have a moral compass inside me, I would be completely different, and I would lose all my butterfly hope from within my glowing wings. My wings would turn to dust. My moral compass is surrounded within me by butterfly wings and beautiful glowing flowers full of bravery. I'm not sure I would survive without my moral compass, even if there truly were to be no consequences, simply because I am me. End poem.
I love that. I do. You know, first of all, I'm loving my butterfly wings and my glowing flowers because that is just all kinds of fairy magic, and I have a thing for fairies, and that is just beautiful. And, you know, even if there were no consequences, simply because I am me, you know, it takes decades, sometimes a lifetime, to even find out who someone truly is, like who you truly are yourself. Like, it is a lifelong process because everybody's ever changing. So to have that good a grasp at such a young age is just brilliant. And it takes pain to get that much self-knowledge. So I don't envy you that. But I'm glad that you know who you are. Now, having grown up in unfortunate situations, maybe not quite as all drink, not so much with the drugs. I know that it is a scary prospect, A, to be around that. But B, you know, there's only two main avenues to go with a lot of other little subtleties. But you either follow in their footsteps or you run 180 degrees. And I'm glad you're taking the road that you are, because the other one is much more painful, even if it doesn't feel that way, because it takes a lot of pain to not fall in line with the unfortunate things.
It does take a lot. And even when you were explaining earlier, like the X, where I actually almost wrote my poem on that, and at the last minute changed my whole entire quote to go more with a compass. And as you were explaining, you know, the alcohol and stuff, I was like, oh, that would be perfect to add in, which in a way sounds so tragic. And I mean, I wrote about it in my previous poems of losing my mother before I graduated high school. And, you know, as sad as it is, my biological father is still alive, and he still calls me every day, and even though he's drunk. And so for me, it's like, you know, yeah, I'm out of the path that I was in, and, you know, I have this compass that's guiding me to where I need to be, but I'm still stuck with some, I mean, I'll always be stuck with some of what I went through. But at the moment, I'm still stuck dealing with a drunken person who at times can't call the difference, can't tell the difference between night and day. So.
And that's a lot to deal with. But, you know, especially when they're the ones that are supposed to be taking care of you. So mm-hmm. It's a good thing that you are taking steps to put a little distance between where you're being dragged and where you know you need to be. Because not for nothing, I'm old. I don't always know where I need to be. I mean, I know where I should be sometimes. I know where my kids need me to get to be, which usually always wins. But as far as my own direction, maybe not so much. So you're ahead of the game, young lady. And back in tour, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you did a good job with it. You know, especially when you look at a situation like that, take it like a cautionary tale. To me, the scary part about, you know, the alcohol is, you know, when you realize it's only lowering inhibitions, so it's really still the same person. So the idea of Jekyll and Hyde being two-faced is a little misleading because it's really still the same person. It's just, you know, more, I guess, honest to, you know, what they're trying to suppress, I guess. I shouldn't say honest, though, but, you know, because they know enough to repress it. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, now that they're not, it's like, I don't like you anymore. And it feels like a different person. And that's hard to contend with because, you know, when you look at someone, and you know, sometimes, especially if you care about them, you want to make excuses for them. So it turns into a whole mess of emotional baggage. It's really very difficult to deal with, you know. Like Pretty Bird was saying, you know, my parents were drunks too, and you know, I actually caught my father choking my mother one night. So, you know, it was not a pretty thing, and you know, I kind of, you know, left a certain, you know, feeling in my mouth and a certain idea in my head. And you kind of, you know, shape your life around that, those experiences. And, you know, you learn and you know better. Like you say, you hone that moral compass. And that's very important and a beautiful message.
Thank you, Ash. And, you know, what you said about people being two-faced but not really two-faced. Yeah, two-faced. And it bringing out the honesty in people, it's almost like, in a way, it brings out the truth more. And I'm not going to go fully into detail yet because I'm saving another one of my poems for a later show. But one of the reasons that I've been so distant the past 2 months is, you know, I've had to deal with a brutally honest father who has been struggling the past couple months with telling me that it's my fault my mother passed away, and that's all he can say. And he claimed for the longest time, even when I was writing my poetry a few months ago, that he could never say I love you to me. And he drunkenly sent me a video the other day of him saying I love you to the toddler of his girlfriend, and it threw me for a loop to the point where I called somebody today and I said, I can't not write anymore because I'm going to go crazy. So that's kind of where some of this poem inspiration came from, was I was going a little crazy myself.
Well, it's a wonderful outlet to vent and purge and get that out of your system in whatever form it takes. And while being somewhat inebriated does, you know, stop people from holding their tongue, it can make people brutal and that exactly. may not always be the truth. That can be a very big exaggeration where you take a pinhole and rip like this vortex into another dimension and a vile junk pour out on people that.
Did you drop, or is my phone?
No, I hear you just fine. Can you not hear me?
Now we
can. We couldn't hear you for a minute, but now we can.
Oh, well, that sucks. But because Blog Talk is, you know, me and Blog Talk are not friends. And
Blog Talk's drunk.
Luckily, it was only about 10 seconds, pretty.
Oh, well, you know, I can say a lot in 10 seconds. I have, you know, I'm a blowhard, and I'm a little long-winded, and I have many words in a little amount of time. But but yeah, it's not always just honesty. It is, and it's when they get super inebriated, it's an over-exaggeration of everything that they can't hold in. So they puke all of their stuff, and they project it on everybody else. So, you know, there is that line, too. It's not all truth. And with that, Ms. Deborah Lee, if you would leave a comment, and then you are on the board.
I would love to. And for one, I agree with the stuff that you guys were saying, too. And Allie, it's really good to hear you. And I'm just going to read what I wrote. I said, this is powerful and from a very mature perspective. And the great details get your point across really well. Your read was awesome. And it was all. It's been such a long time that you forget all the things that you were going through, and then you come back and you're just going through some more. Sometimes it seems never ending, but you show us all the time. You know, you're amazingly strong. So like, keep writing it out. And if you can't call and you can't go online, get a pen and a paper, but don't ever stop writing it out, because I think Pretty Bird just touched on the fact that it's an amazing outlet. You got to get it out. Got to get
and
it
nobody
out.
Ever has
a great
to see
job
it. Nobody ever has to see it. If you don't want them to, you could burn it after you write it. It's the act of writing it that does the work, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'm not going to keep it hidden. There's multiple poems that I plan on writing the next couple of days that, or possibly next couple of shows that really focus on what I've been through the past 2 months, because it hasn't been all, I wish I could say butterflies and rainbows, but it hasn't been. And I haven't announced it yet in my poetry, but I'll announce it here, is I found out 3 weeks ago, which is what made me really want to start writing again. I found out that I'm pregnant with another child that's due in January. And there's been a lot of anxiety that's came with it because, well, any original followers of mine know what happened with my first kid. And it's, in a way, very amazing to be out of where I was. But as, you know, you just said, Deb, it's like, even if I do calling and stop writing poetry, there's still stuff being thrown at me. But, and I amaze myself sometimes. Somehow I haven't thrown in the red towel and said, you know, excuse my foul language for a minute, but fuck it at this point, because I've been through so much. But I put that butterfly line in my poem before I even knew you were coming on the show. So,
well, congratulations.
I like that you butterflies in. No matter what the reason.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading all the emotion, first of all, because I love any poetry that makes me feel something or think something. There's a lot of words out there that people write just to write, that they're not connected with things. So it really, when there's any kind of semblance of honesty in it, it matters. And that's my favorite thing to read. So looking forward to that. So whenever you're ready, Deb, you're up.
Okay, thank you. All right, so this is called Lemon Lime Flavored Liquid Filter Remover. Here we go. If dealing with liars, just guzzle lemon-lime flavored elixir from the beaker. Or mix the liquid into gelatin for jello shots. Sip two swigs in soda over ice cubes or spiked coffee. Then add cream and sugar. The hot mug hits the spot. Now, no whiplash pinched into my neck from all the turnstile cheek maneuvers. Motions are filtered by the green in the glass. See no swelling from biting my tongue. Just a throbbing in my foot from kicking ass. But the citrine citrus dew buffers that throb too. And palm. And I took a sort of dark humor from it. But the way I see it is like, even if there was a such thing, and we talked about this earlier, as a hide potion, and I could just bite your head off instead of biting my tongue, my conscience would kick my ass. And sorry, Allie. And like, it would still... My brain would still filter me, and I'd have to be the one. But, you know, I, too, am proud to be me. So we are, right, Pretty Bird?
That's for sure. And you know what? And that's – I've always struggled with people's ideals, and I'm finger-quoting ideals and their perfection, society's view on nonsense, because not for nothing – we are all who we are, and in that we are perfectly who we're meant to be, and we're all perfectly imperfect. So I'm not saying that every day we are the best. I have theories upon theories upon theories, because all I do is think all day in my head because I'm crazy. And so we are perfectly us. We are the perfect us on good days and bad days. It's part of who we are. There's nothing wrong with that. Do we want to improve on our bad days? Of course we do, because we're human. But our problem as a society is that everybody says, be your best. But we judge ourselves by our very best moments of our very best days. Like, that is what we strive to be. But then we see ourselves as the worst parts of who we are, that we can never attain that very best thing. But I find that to be all false, because some days the very best we can do is get out of bed. Some days brushing our teeth is enough of a struggle that if we get that done, it's okay. The days that we're actually out of our head or whatever we're going through, and we're fully functional, even if we don't feel whole, those are all wins. And to me, those are the best we can do in that moment. And so that counts as doing your best. And it doesn't fall short from not being that one time you were perfect, you know? And, you know, just throwing my view of life out there and just force feeding the world my crap. So sorry. But it's ever since I adopted that, or came up with that, whatever, I don't know if I heard it somewhere on TV, but to me it feels like my own thing. And that was years ago. But the second that I realized that, you know, today, because, you know, I suffer from anxiety, sometimes I have bouts of depression because, you know, I'm human. But if anybody's gone through serious depressive episodes, you know a shower is a big stinking deal. And to get up and be motivated to take care of yourself and do things sometimes takes all the strength you have. It takes all the motivation you can muster, even if you get up, take a shower, put on jammies, and go back to bed. And the second I realized that that is the best I can do that day, I stopped feeling bad about all the things I couldn't do. And it was a big change for me. So, you know, just throwing that out there. Not sure what sparked the conversation, because I can't remember things that I said 10 seconds ago, but apparently that had to come out somehow. So there you
are. It was just all about being yourself, dear.
Okay, then. So see if it's. And, but with your poem, okay, first of all, I am loving the now no whiplash, you know, pinched into my neck from all the turnstile cheek maneuvers. you know, you are better than I. Me turning the other cheek, it doesn't happen. I just can't. I'm like, did you really just say what you said? Because this is what I heard. Is that what you meant that you sound like? Because I'm all about clarification, which comes off very much as confrontation, which I don't mean it to be. You know, I'm not being like, the hell you say. I'm just like, wait a second, did I hear you right? You know? You know, sometimes I will bite my tongue. Yes, I sometimes my tongue bleeds for how far I have to bite it. But
yep.
Because,
you bite it harder than others.
You know, yeah, sometimes. And the thing with that is this. I don't know that I can remember a moment that I was ever mean on purpose. You know, I don't tease people. I don't sit there and say, you know, you look like crap. Didn't you brush your hair? Why'd you go out in that outfit? Like, I'm just not that person. But people, because, you know, well, if you have a father that says that crap to you growing up, you don't say that to other people because you know how that feels. But I do, when I am pissed off, when I'm really pissed off, and people want to project their crap on me, I am really good at reflecting their own image back at them. I was like, really? Because you're the one that A, B, C, and D, and nothing makes somebody hate you like telling them their own truth. And so while I'm not trying to hurt them or actively mean, if someone's going to attack me with nonsense, I'm going to be like, excuse me, but you did this, that, and the other thing, so don't judge me. And then
how about
like,
a spoonful of truth?
Yeah, and so that, and then people are like, she's vile. Nah, that would be you. But, you know, that wasn't my reflection, but thanks. So,
right, well, that ties back to the truth hurts and or shoot the messenger, you know?
If you can't dish it out, I mean, if you can't take it, I can speak.
You know? Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I was going to use that same quote in a different way, though. Don't dish it out if you can't take it. I don't dish it because I don't like being picked on. I can't take it. I don't, so I don't do it.
I have this personality that is very grating to people. I don't know if you all have noticed. People either love me or hate me. There's a middle ground. Yeah, people do not kind of like Pretty Bird. Like with my reading, people either are all in or I can't stand the way she writes. You know, that's just the way it has worked in every facet of my being. And I'm okay with that because it kind of weeds out the riffraff. But it's a difficult thing because people come to me and all of a sudden, like people I don't know, like people on the street, people in my inbox, all the time, people just come at me thinking that they know me. They either read something, they see something, they get a feeling from my aura. I have no idea. And they will come and spill their guts for 16 hours. I have no patience for this. I have no time for this. I don't know these people. You know, can tell me your name first. Let's just have a get-to-know-you conversation before I know which part of your family is cheating on somebody else because I don't need to know your business. You know, and so it's a very odd thing to have people be that personal with you. And in those instances, I tend to detach myself and I will absolutely bite my tongue. I will absolutely not get involved in their business. I'm like, oh, isn't that interesting? Well, I hope you feel better. Okay, thank you. I got to go. And because you cannot ask a question, you cannot engage, you know, so sometimes you have to bite your tongue just to not be ensconced in everybody else's drama. It's a big part of why I needed a week off because I'm always in the middle of everybody else's drama through no fault of my own. Sometimes you need to take a step back. And I'm okay with that. But that whole biting your tongue, which is different than turning the cheek. You know, I'm not good at turning the cheek, but I can bite through my tongue till I'm choking on my own blood. And unless you're poor Raph who gets to hear me lose my shit all the time. Because, you know, it's got to go somewhere.
So, yeah, you know, and some of that sympathy for Hatter over here. I do the same thing to him.
You know, God bless those with the shoulders and the ears that take it all in because I, sometimes you just need to let things out. And it's really easy for me, who has a very small filter, if any, to blurt it out at the wrong person, because we tend to be very mean to those that we're closest to, because we know that we're not worried about them leaving or not worried about whatever. They put up with our crap, and so we inadvertently take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You know, and which is sad and painful and hurts me, because I don't want to do that. So I personally, I'm glad that, you know, some people let me vent, because I'm a talker. I don't know if y'all picked up on that. And then sometimes I have a
blast. No.
I have to, like, let it out. That's
stuff. Well, birds do sing.
Well, I don't know about the singing, but I can jibber jabber a good bit. And, yeah, me holding that in, you want to see me lose my mind? I didn't write once for 7 years. 7 years to
write. Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, I had a bunch of kids back to back. I was running around doing everything. My husband's out of town for, you know, half the year. And, but, you know, like 4 days a week, he was gone for, like, you know, it was not good. Anyway, so I'm running around doing everything. And I was that mom with this one's in the Cub Scouts and that one's in the Boy Scouts and they're all in band. And they're blah, 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 blah. Okay, like, I did not join the BTA because I hate people, you know? And nobody's efficient, and I have this thing about efficiency, so I didn't want to, you know. So I was no PTA, but I ran the Cub Scouts, so I was in the mess. Okay, so I didn't really have time to write, and I really didn't have, I think before we had moved up here, my father, I was published in an anthology, and he's like, I could get published in this, and that I could write a poem with 16 lines, all of them saying, no, 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 and I bet I can get published, because my father can be an asshole. And it really kind of deflated me. It really, really did. And I didn't ask for his approval. I didn't tell him that I was in there. But my mother did, so I blame her. And he thought he was funny. And instead of being remotely humorous, that was just painful. And so I moved up here and got involved in all the stuff. And I didn't take any time for me. And I didn't think I needed it. I was like, whatever, it doesn't matter anyway. Because we all go through moments like it's not important. Except for that it is. If that's how you express yourself, if that's how you escape your own brain and your brain is, you know, running 50 miles an hour all the time or 150 miles an hour, then you need that break. So apparently I was losing my mind a little bit. I was overly emotional. And two of my friends basically got together with my husband and hijacked my children, all of my children, and left me a present. They like came over like at the butt crack of dawn, left me a bag of stuff on the table. They said, we're taking your kids for the day. Hijacked all my children. Okay, like, I didn't know when they were coming back. She's like, don't text us because we're not going to answer you. Take a bubble bath. Take a nap. Do the damn thing. And I opened up this bag when they left, and it was fancy, fancy pens and three leather-bound journals that were so beautiful, I didn't want to write in them. And I left them there for 4 hours and took a long bubble bath, and I cried because I hadn't even thought about writing. And I filled them up and typed them out over the next couple of months. And nothing like looking at your pain and writing, let me tell you. And it's the reason why I started at all again, because I don't know that I would have, because I tend to be very much, you know, when they shut you down, they shut you down, you know. But let's say hello to Miss Sweet Pea, which I was not expecting. Happy anniversary, Sweet.
Hi, Sweet. Thank you.
Happy anniversary, doll. To Mr. Sweet, too.
Mr. Sweet.
Yeah, he's right here. He's hanging out with me. We're eating ice cream.
Ice cream. I do. I'm probably lactose intolerant because it doesn't do good things to me, but I do so love ice cream, and I don't care of the consequences.
You could have lemon-lime sherbet.
That is not ice cream.
No, that's not.
Pointing that out.
That's sherbet, not ice cream. Huge difference.
Yeah. So I think I like talked for like, I don't know, 20 minutes and haven't gotten to your comments yet, Deb. So did, let's do that. So, Allie, what are your thoughts on Deb's piece?
Because I can stop laughing. I said, I'll just read what I commented, but I said, sadly, alcohol and other stuff is a remover. It removes the filters from people, and it's definitely heartbreaking at times. Starving definitely occurs as well as something that I know way too personally. I used to catch myself biting my tongue a lot, but as I have gone through so much, I have mostly lost that filter, which includes my filter of being completely innocent and not cursing at this point. The jello shots line was so personal that I remember what it was like to watch people get drunk on jello shots, and you'd think with shots people wouldn't get drunk, but no, they do. It's so nice to hear your voice again, Deb, and it was very needed. Also, hello, sweet.
Thank you so much, Allie.
And Rack and Tour.
Hello, Allie.
What are your thoughts on Deb's poem?
I'm all wrapped up in the lemon lime. I don't know. you know the duality of that, as opposed to like the duality of Jekyll and Hyde, I thought was a great play. And you know, you always tell a good story. I understand your foot hurting. It's a good thing that lemon lime helps the foot too.
Thank you,
oh
Rack and Tour. Hey, real quick on a side note, remember I had mentioned to you that if you pick some of your topics around stuff you have recorded, it would probably be an easy thing. Just so you know, I went through your whole profile and I came up with 149 of your poems that have recordings. Maybe you can work with that list. Just saying.
That's a lot of, and I haven't recorded anything in a long time. And this whole last year, I don't think I've recorded anything because it's been a time. But it's 149. I need to. Well, that is an interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you look through this list, and he's like, okay, well, his topic could be, just for sake of argument, bubblegum, and he'll pull out his bubblegum poem.
Oh,
yes,
way, Mr. Rack and Tour.
So it's like part of the reason that people call and hang out is also to hear him read one of his poems, and
yes,
this
sir.
Way it would more assure that he would have a poem for his own show if he chose from his list of amazing recordings and picked a topic based on something from any of them. It was just a thought.
That is an interesting thought to pick a topic that you've already written to. Not that you can't write something new in addition to that, but at least we'll be able to hear you in your own words, you know? I mean, I can read you if you want me to, but I don't read like you do.
Exactly. That's all I was saying. It's stuff that he's already read, and which, incidentally, I'm way off topic here, but Rack and Tour, as I was picking up these poems that have recordings, what I did was I made a list called Rack's Recordings, and I just kept adding them to the list, and I was totally blown away. I would say out of those 149, there might be a dozen that are not already on multiple lists. So you have made your fan club for, I mean, seriously, lots of them had six or more, or on six or more lists. There was
awesome.
A few so it blew me away. Very impressive, which means they would make amazing prompts. And I'm going to shut my mouth now, and I have to go anyway. But really cool topic, pretty broad. And again, it was awesome to hear you. Talk soon, Allie and Rack and Tour, and happy anniversary again, Mr. and Mrs. Sweet. Love and respect, everybody.
Thank you for joining us and writing that fabulous poem. It was nice to hear you, too. So have a wonderful night.
Thank you. You, too.
So I put a poem of mine. I have three of them.
Sorry, Pretty.
You're right.
I was gonna say, I don't want to interrupt you.
I was
going to get off and go to bed before I fall asleep on the show because I am
you're fine.
Exhausted. But I'll call in again at some point.
That would be awesome.
Have a
I'm
nice
so glad
night,
that you
everyone.
Can join us tonight. Yeah, you too.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
You're not familiar with exhausted, are you, pretty bird?
Not at all. Don't know the meaning of the word. So I have a brevity of mine up, not my title piece, which I wrote on. Like I took the hide the truth from the title of my poem. So wrote the poem like a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, a while ago. And I was just like, it's spooky season. So this is since we went off on the elixir is alcohol. This is Magnum and it's a brevity. So I'm just going to read this one and then we will move on with the discussion because I need to hear what Sweet thinks of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the book, the idea, the everything about it, because this is the topic of the evening. So my little poem goes like this. Again, it's called Magnum. It's like in a cup or a glass, a bottle or a flask, liquid courage masquerades as personality. Everyone wants to be someone else sometime. So choose a poison and swallow inhibitions, be that someone or someone else. Control is an illusion. Courage cannot be purchased or consumed. Bluffing affability through a counterfeit life found in a cup or a glass, a bottle or a flask.
You're amazing with the alliteration on that. And that's a perfect brevity, you know. It's a shot. It's a poetry shot. I mean, the idea is kind of brilliant, you know. And you know, back to that comment that I was mentioned before that you kind of jumped on, you know, correctly. So the idea of you know, your personality coming out. It's not so much the exaggeration, I think, but you know, I guess the drunken judgment that obscures it, which, you know, I guess that is exaggeration. I don't know, but there's an unfortunate combination of things that come out that you kind of hit on without even, you know, delving into it, much like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Because you know, as you mentioned, the book, as brief as it is all about innuendo and what it brings out in your brain, and you know, that's something that I appreciate in writing as well, and you did a wonderful job of that. What'd you think,
Thank
sweet?
You.
Well, I like that. You know, it's short, it's sweet, it's to the point, and it's all pretty bird. Bluffing, I like, because it's like bluffing, counterfeit, life, there's so many there, and it's just found in a cap or a glass or a bottle or a flask, but everything is just, again, no courage, masquerades, you want to be someone else, you know, swallow those inhibitions, control is always an illusion, courage can't be purchased or consumed, and how you do it in such tiny little short words, which is A, unusual for you, so I'm very proud of that. And I like that it's all there. And you just did it. Just, you know, there's the mask. Let's just do it, like, with courage. But how many people actually have to be drunk or high to do it? You've got those people that can just walk up to you blank face and be that evil person and have the ability to be charming and sweet, and they're just absolutely stabbing people in the back left and right, and that's what's really scary about some of these Jekyll and Hyde people.
That's why Dracula's Prince Charming.
Yeah.
Brilliant. There you go. It's a magic elixir. There's something to be said about the duality of man, about how he did not create a monster. He is that monster, because in all of us, we have that darkness. We can, you know, people are all, I could never kill anybody. I could. I absolutely could. 1,000,000%. I am positive if somebody comes after my kids, I will stab them in the face in a heartbeat. I will rip off my arm and beat them to death with it. I don't care about my pain. You're not hurting my babies. You know, I don't care if my baby's grown. The answer is hell no. You're going through me first. I could never. I could. I don't. I won't. I have no intention of doing it. But if it was you know, a do-or-die situation, I absolutely would. I mean, I'm sure I'd feel like crap at some point, but, you know, no. I am not that person that would say never, because I know who I am, and I am imperfect, and I am not this, you know, holier than thou, all good being. We're people, and human nature has all the deadly sins. You know, we are a fluctuating amalgamation of Hell Week. We are, we have all the sins. We have the lust, which is my favorite, and we have the wrath, and we have the pride and the envy and the gluttony, which is always your favorite. And oh crap, there's two more. What the hell are they? Oh, that's going to drive me nuts. Okay, there's lust and wrath and envy and gluttony and sloth and pride. And what's the other one?
Prejudice. No.
Sorry. That's funny. Oh, that's going to drive me nuts. What is it? Greed. Thank you, avarice.
Greed.
Yes, thank you. Jeez, Louise. I, you know, for somebody who loves Hell Week, I sure can't remember my sins. But we do all those things, you know. They are labeled as cardinal or deadly because they can so easily take over parts of our personality. These are not things that necessarily feel bad. Envy can drive somebody to want more of something, can push them in their career. If he can do it, I can do it. You know, lust,
yeah.
Let's just get right down to business. That just feels good. You know, greed, well, more is more, and sometimes more is more, and more is good. And all of these are not inherently evil, and they are all very easily part of everybody, even if we don't want to see it. And so the fact that Dr. Jekyll made this and it turned him into all of those sins without remorse is a beautifully twisted thing, because he never denies who he is. It's not who he wants to be. It's not who he is unaltered, but it's all inside of him. And he absolutely owns that truth, knowing that it's there. And you write dark, sweet. I write dark. Let's face it. The darkness lives. You know, we're good. That doesn't mean we're going to go and, you know, start burying bodies in our backyard. Well, we know better. We'd be burying in somebody else's backyard, but still. So.
Don't believe that until they activate your backyard.
Bob just laughed at you, by the way.
She's
awesome.
Going to dig up the bones and get her in trouble.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to read so I can go hang out with my husband for a while, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes, because I'll talk forever. You're up on the board, by the way.
Okay. So here I go. Push your show along. I'm going to read and go.
You're fine.
So, all right. This is 10 Shades of Lies. Do you know that I loved you? Bombarded in the glow of white light, blinded by my heart, love at first sight. Giddy and childish, I ran straight ahead, sacrificed all, left nothing unsaid. Blindly, I believed in the dream, even as we unraveled at the seams. Shadows began to dance in the round, laughing and pointing at me, the clown. My world went white to gray, lie after lie, choking my airways. Teardrops turned sadness into acid rain. I cursed you with loneliness and pain. Feel the cold steel tip of my blade, die slowly, love. Absorb my rage. Did you know? I love you.
Okay. So, you know, you started with, first of all, I love the book ending because it's just a very powerful thing. But that whole did you know that I loved you, first of all, had me near tears, because the idea of that question alone is indicative of pain. Like, didn't you know? Like, did how, you know, like how could you? You know, like this was everything.
Uh-huh.
And you go through all of this, and then it's like, die, sucker, which is just fabulous. I am just saying, I was not expecting that little twist because it was very much in it, like embedded into my flesh, under my skin, and 2 seconds away from crying, I was sucking it up. Let me tell you, because when you are in that place where that question lives, if you've ever been in that place, it takes you instantly back to that unfortunate feeling that will seems to forever live under the surface, apparently, since it almost fell out of my face. Thank you for that. You know, where there you're everything, and there is a joy in that innocence that, you know, you don't ever want to lose that. It only happens before time and reality and all the mundane things. You know what I mean? It's a beautiful thing. And then somebody does something stupid, and like I said, you bury them in the backyard. I live next to this big field, sweet, just so that you know. Nobody will ever find the bodies. So obviously you need to like do death in Tampa because, you know, the body will stink if you have to drive from where you are.
That's right.
But I love this, you know.
I got mountains, honey.
Well, there you go. You just toss it behind one of them suckers. And
that's right.
The sadness turns into acid rain. What a beautiful way to say, I'm done crying, and it's your fault. Let's just get this over with. How can I make this even? You know? Well, you no longer deserve to live. How dare you? I absolutely love that. And they call you the Queen of Darkness for a reason. But wow, that twist in emotion. And it's swift. It's a very swift two-line. It's right there, you know, lie after lie, choking my airways. And then the teardrops turn into acid rain and be like, listen, you did it to your damn self. And I love that. I absolutely do. Because it's not this, you know, you're not, it's not this broken piece. And we've all been broken, and we know what that feels like. This is the surface cracked. It's coming out. But you know what? That feels like crap, so F you. And I kind of love that. You know, die slowly. Let me take this old-timey, heavy, rusty, dirty sword and just slowly impale you. I personally like the idea of way back when you did that show on the medieval torture devices and, you know, the, you know, if you're going to impale somebody, might as well go straight through from one hole to the other because that sounds very painful to me. I'd be like, that's how I would kill somebody if I could, you know? So I love this. I do. I love the emotion in it. I love that little twist that comes out of nowhere. I love that that twist feels sultry. It feels sly. It's got that little side eye kicking, you know. That little twist wears red lipstick, and it is fabulous. So, Rack, what are your thoughts?
Oh, you know, I think Sleepy's a genius. To just what is it like 6 words? Did you know that I love you? I mean, that's the guts of this whole piece because, you know, there's a certain justification. It's like, well, that means I could do what I need, what I want to you, you know, and there's a sense of Pretty Bird said, you know, well, you did it to your damn self, you deserve it. Kind of a thing. It's like, well, you know, because of my feelings for you, I'm entitled to do this. Your life is mine to dispose of, you know, and especially if you're not acknowledging that I love you, you know, it's as much a statement as it is a question, you know, did you know that I love you? I almost hear it as, you know, but I love you, as offered up almost as an excuse, but, you know, even though it's not an excuse, but I love you, you know, it's like, well, that makes it okay that I'm impaling you, you know, or, I mean, yeah, the emotion in this is it's very relatable, and I enjoyed it very much.
Kill me now.
You see, you're, oh my. Well, you know, we did talk about how you'd be impaled, so there is that. But you are just brilliant, my sweet. You truly are. Your writing is delicious.
Thank you.
And have a happy anniversary.
That's why we call her sweet.
Thank you. Ooh, yeah.
I'm so glad you stopped by, sweetheart. Enjoy your night.
Thank you.
Next
Thank
week.
You guys. Bye.
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 So before I move on, because Mr. JCA dropped us a poem and I'm all excited to read it, I think I am going to look to see what is on the calendar, because I didn't look beforehand. So let me look now. You know, you would think I would have my crap together, but no.
You do.
Those of you who think I do, I don't. I mean,
what the fuck?
I know where it is. It's just not gathered all in one spot. Okay, let's see. Tomorrow night is we don't, and then next Wednesday. Okay, I know what I'm looking for now. Okay, so we have personal prompt Monday, and that is on the 10th, which is Columbus Day. It is with Miss Deborah Lee, and we have quotes from our very own Miss Heavenly Angel. So there are 10 quotes to choose from, and really interesting artwork, like really interesting, very diverse artwork. Oh, look, it's a fairy. That's not what I chose, because I'm twisted and warped, and I don't choose pretty things to write to, because my writing's a little dark and twisted. Ooh, that's dragons. That looks like rib bones. Like, it's really interesting, beautiful images. So check that out for all the inspiration. And then that's on Monday, so I'm working backwards. On Saturday, it is the 13th. It is ashes. See, that's right up my alley. I can burn some things down. So whatever ashes brings to mind, whether it's ashes to ashes, dust to dust, whether it is, you know, the charred remains of a rack of ribs on the grill, whatever ashes bring to you, the embers of hell, whatever you think, you write on that, you call in, you read, enjoy. And then on Wednesday, which is the 12th, it's Hatter's Jukebox, which is always a good time. If you love music and talking about music, that is the show for you. So all good things, all good things. And let me see. That is the 12th. I'm looking to see Thursday is open. And next Friday we have Open Poetry with Miss. I don't know Linda's name. I mean, I know Linda's name, but I can't think
Liquid
of
damage.
Her. Thank Liquid you. Damage. Liquid Damage. Oh, my goodness. My brain is not okay. So
no,
it
especially
is.
Especially on a hard night, you should be thinking Liquid Damage.
You would think that is freaking perfect. Yeah, my brain is not even okay. Usually I jump to a fanciful conclusion, but apparently not tonight. Well, I don't jump to sane conclusions. I've been all over the map today. You'd think I was on something. I'm not. I am 100% sober. I promise. So on the board, we have Mr. JCA, who was kind enough to drop us a piece called Cannot Hide, because tonight we are all things Jekyll and Hyde, which is my favorite old-timey horror book, which, you know, is more suspenseful than horror. But anyway, it is up my alley. And it goes like this. This is Cannot Hide by JCA. I hope they can't see through me, this image that I've worked to hide, this dark inside me, the power that I've earned just to evolve my being, to craft me to a god. They would laugh no longer call me odd. The vengeance would be golden, have everything I'd want. Their blood would drip like rivers, their laughs no longer haunt. So just one vial of potion is all that it would take to release the beast inside of me and seal their hellish fates. I love this. I do. And nothing like a little spooky rhyme to open spooky season. I hope they can't see through me, you know. That he's worked so hard to get to where he is, you know, just to evolve my being, but then it's to craft me to a god, you know. There is something so twisted about that line that I just absolutely, like that line is like whispered over an evil laugh. You know what I mean? It comes with its own background music. It's fabulous. I see what you did there. Don't think that didn't go beyond me. And but yes, an evil laugh like that. And here's the thing: we all have these thoughts. You know, maybe we don't all think of ripping people to shreds with their blood dripping like rivers. But, you know, whatever it takes to embarrass somebody that is that has teased you or humiliated you, that those sounds, those moments that haunt you even to adulthood, to stop that. We've all been like, if I could, I'd you know, give them a spoon of their own, there's that, of their own medicine. I would, you know, if I was, you know, judge, jury, and executioner, I would put them to death, and they would be painful. I would rip their flesh off. You know, we've all had these thoughts, but then we're like, yeah, but I'm not, so I guess not, you know? And so this starts with, well, I hope they can't see, you know, that he's hiding this darkness. But I love how he lets it out. With no shame, with no no qualms whatsoever. This is full of, F me, F you, you know? You must die now. Enjoy. I'm going to hang you from the rafters and eviscerate you alive in the streets, you know? It's just, you know, they used to do that. They used to, like, hang them out the window, like slit them, like, fully eviscerate them. On the floor, and while they're still, their intestines are out on the street, they're hanging there alive and, you know, bleeding out with all their, looking at their own entrails. That, I mean, there was some really twisted crap going on back in the day, but I absolutely love this. So how did you enjoy JCA's spookiness?
Oh, I thought there's a lot of brilliance in this. He really, you know, and the fact that he did a brevity, mildly disappointing because I would have liked him to, you know, do it a little longer. But I thought I really enjoyed it from beginning to end. The opening thought, you know, like you mentioned, I hope they don't see right through me. That's so relatable and visceral on so many different levels. I mean, that's life, you know, that's business. I mean, AP could probably talk for 2 hours about that, you know. It's such a good, you know, in business that somebody sees through you. You lose all advantage. You can't negotiate. You can't do anything if they see through you, if they know where you're coming from. That's the whole, you know, now I can't get the upper hand. I mean, poker and
the more
and
they know,
like that,
the more they can discern the weaknesses.
Yeah, I mean, that's such an amazingly, incredibly powerful statement in 5 words, 7 words, however, I mean, and then he follows on with you know, some similar thought in the sense of, you know, there's a lot of honesty in what he's saying and pain. I mean, the darkness comes out in this in a wonderful way. You know, it's I almost imagine if you would have read it, you know, he wouldn't have intentionally wouldn't have included that laugh, because there's something about you know, leaving that out when I don't know.
Well,
the way
it's there,
whether you
hear it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Which is amazing.
I thought it was great. You know, brilliant job, JCA.
I mean, how magic do words have to be to make you hear things that aren't there, you know?
Uh-huh.
Love that. I do. So there are two more poems for tonight, and they are both mine, so you're going to have to suffer through it. Ha, 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 ha.
You say stuff right, say thank you.
So I'm going to end on my Hide the Truth, which I took the title of for this very night of fabulous poetry. So I'm going to read Coalesce, and it's a little long for me. I mean, I've written longer, but mostly they're shorter. Coalesced. And for those who don't know, because it's not the most common word, I will let you know what that means in a second so that I don't give you my janky freaking verbiage. I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's to come together to form one mass or whole. So there's that. And it goes like this. I awoke in a dream surrounded by a bilious familiarity. Angry shades of the drying blood of hope takes over venomous fangs of discontent. Stagnant shadows of effluvium emanate from the molten flesh of this creature I seem to know. But how? How do I know this putrid soul, this being born of irascible acrimony? Seething breaths sear my senses as I feel the pounding heart scream within its chest, aflame with the atrocities it has incited. Yet, in its gentle eyes, there is no malice. There is only the reflection of an angel. Gossamer vestments blow in the stillness, so effulgent in the darkness. Again, familiar and uncomfortable. Its eyes bore into mine that reflection of heaven. I could not see myself in those eyes. The gaze seemed to hypnotize in its polarity. As I floated unseen, I looked at this being, seething miasmata while reflecting a Sarah. Acidic tears of truth fell from within my poisoned soul as the creature and the reflection merged in the bluest flame and transformed my spirit into flesh. I am both the reflection and the being, living the anguish of the truth of what I am, fighting every moment to be less than and more than, pretending that I do not embody that dichotomy of bile and bliss, seraph and succubus, the truth and the lie. And poem.
You know, your vernacular, your vocabulary, just—you totally
a little over the top in this.
Well, it's supposed to be though, and you know, I love the way you composed the whole. I'm not going to be able to talk now. Thank you. You know the whole Jekyll and Hyde duality, I mean, there was a bunch of lines in this that I really wish I could see better so that I could quote them. I mean, because they deserve repeating. This is one of those pieces that you know, each time you read it, a different thing I think is going to bite you in the ass, because that's what your words tend to do. You know, you talk about, you know, the people not able to stand looking at their own reflection. You know, you can't help but see, you know, in the words that you give us, exactly what it is that you're talking about. And you do it when you're looking at yourself. So, you know, there's that little bit of you staring back, even though you see yourself at the same time. You know, the familiar commiseration with what you're saying. But at the same time, you know, it's not just you. You know, it's an incredible thing. And a lovely ride that I enjoy every single time.
Thank you. It's funny because this was very much evil, you know, heaven and hell. And this was, I don't know either of these. These don't look familiar. They feel familiar, but I don't recognize the angel. I don't recognize the beast. But together, think that it's kind of both of us, like all of us, like we are all good and all bad, meaning that we are neither, because we are both. And so it's the ending of this poem, that whole living in the anguish of the truth of what I am, fighting every moment to be less than and more than, is every moment of every day. That's what that is. Most people don't notice it. Most people don't realize. Most people don't. It's just how we are. We play the game, which I hate, so I don't. But, you know, in the grand messes of society, they dress how they dress to certain places with certain people where they might be seen by whatever, and they're very particular. I don't care. But I used to, you know. I can't wear this there, and I can't wear this here, and if I'm going to this mall over there in Boca, I need to wear my new shoes because I don't want to look like a bum. And now I'm just like, I don't give a crap, you know? And and so you play the game. You're nice when you need to be nice. You're tough when you need to be tough. And the people that only know you in those roles only see you as that one thing. But we are, but we're not always nice, and we're not always tough. And when we are who we are, I would like to think we're more nice than not nice. But really, when you think about it, I think we're all looking for a nice neutral base with no guilt, with no trying, with no having to think about it, just to relax and be. And in that place, which usually happens by ourselves, but in that place, there is peace and there is beauty. The trick to life that I have not been able to conquer yet is extrapolating that peace into your into all things, into your all of your different ways of being, the different facets of who you are. Just because you have to be stern here or gentle there does not mean that that is unpeaceful. It's only unpeaceful when you haven't embraced all of who you are. And I know who I am. Doesn't mean I've embraced it all.
You're kind of glossing over something, though, that I thought was completely brilliant. And you know, because of your, what's the word? And I'm not going to say ambivalence, when it comes to titles. But you know, the idea of coalescing is the two things combined, but they end up forming something else, something completely new. And that's kind of what you're talking about. You know, yeah. You're neither one. The other, you're a completely different, original, unique, new thing, you know, even though it's made of, you know, those other things. And you did that in one word. So, you know, yeah.
Breakfast.
I'll shut up now.
Language is beautiful. And it's not that, okay, there is that, you know, flour and eggs and whatever make a cake. You know, the sum is greater than or the whatever is greater than the sums of its parts. I'm telling you, I can't. My little
you can't brain
shade thoughts. No, I can't brain at all. It's not. It's embarrassing. Anyway, I promise I am intelligent, even if I'm unintelligible. you know, but there's something to be said in that piece that it's not just that they make. Hold on a second. What? So do dishes. Okay. That's my kid because he needs to do his dishes and he's trying to make sure it's okay. Yes, do your chores. It's almost midnight. Thank you.
It's never not okay to do chores.
He's so funny. And he's doing so good trying not to be on the air. I love him. But there's something to be said about the fact that we are all things. You know, we are love and we are pain and we are sadness and we are anger and we are all the emotions all at once. And sometimes, you know, one of them weighs more than the other. That's just how it works. It doesn't mean that the others don't exist within us. So that whole unrecognizable as fully evil and unrecognizable as fully good makes perfect sense to me, because until they merge, they're not familiar. Yes. But not recognizable, you know what I mean? And then when they become whatever, I was going to say greater good, but that's not necessarily what that is, but when they coalesce and they evolve or merge or whatever, then it's familiar, because then it's in that center zone of balance versus imbalance that we all live in. So I thought that was interesting. Not, by the way, wasn't tooting my horn or whatever. I was just trying to explain things, because I know sometimes I sound like it like a hole. Don't mean to, but you know, there is that. So I have my final piece, which I was going to read first, but it didn't work out that way. So I thought I was going to start off the night with the title piece of Hide the Truth. The good doctor was always a little evil, because I thought that was fabulous. Huh?
The doctor is in.
There you go. Well, the doctor was in Hyde, too, but nobody noticed. And so this is that poem, and it goes like this. In the bowels of my person, stabbed in silence, breathing through my breaths, glimpsed in the shadow of a nightmare, I am joy in depravity, duly fueled in kindness and avarice. Dressed in treachery's skin, bearing no second thoughts, at will, I release the confines of morality, sipping face in good deeds and a smile. Remorse snuffed out by design, alchemic choice, nary a burden be, without reason, without thought, faceless violence and unabashed turpitude, dressed in the color of inner demons. A semblance of peace and vile carelessness, and freedom, sweet freedom to smite without cause, to live untethered by commandments, hidden from all who know who I was molded to be. Unbound, evil rises in apathetic strength, unhindered, beating the juxtaposition of man, senseless with its own duality, eternally split, feeding darkness with indecision and the truth that it feels so good to be bad. And Paul.
Oh, good to be bad. that reminds me of that stupid meme, Facebook wisdom I call it. Good girls go to heaven, bad girls go everywhere. But I don't know. I love your words. You boil things down to their essence sometimes, and you really cut to the chase. I guess that's kind of what you're talking about with the evilness too sometimes, huh?
So I have a respect for human evil. And I say that because to me there's a distinction between, you know, monsters and creatures and demons and things that come from hell. And I mean, if we're going spooky season, might as well go all in, right? So on whatever level that exists, it's human evil that I find interesting because it's honest. You know, it lies, but the evil itself, the darkness itself, it is what it is. You can't pretend it's not. It's just there's a certain, it deserves a certain amount of respect, not, you know, adoration or anything like that. It's just, it's honest, you know, it doesn't pretend to be nice. It doesn't, you know what I mean? I mean, people who are evil do, because that's how they get things, by pretending they're something else. But generally speaking, the ones that, how can I say this? In the world, we have all come across or seen or whatever, people that are always, that are very charismatic, that have a crowd of people around them for no reason. They can act like an idiot. They can be mean and they can do whatever, and they don't care. And because they don't care, people laugh it off. Because they don't make a big deal, because they're not doing it in anger, because they are not sitting there going, you know, you're fat, you're ugly, you're this, you're poor, you're all that, because they're not doing it like that, like with hate and whatever. If they're all just like, ah, oh, but I would never, and you know better than to ask that, and they move on. People are in awe of that, and they want to be around that because that's not like anybody else. It's not like who we are, generally speaking, as a populace. Now, that's not something to look up to, you know. That's something, but it is something that makes us in awe of that behavior. Like, how might it be to not have all of these self-imposed hindrances? If my mom didn't teach me manners, maybe I could also get away with acting like that. You know what I mean? If it was, and the thing is, what keeps us from acting this way as adults is because it feels bad. You know, it feels bad to make people feel bad, you know, or at least that's the hope of for me in humanity, is that it feels bad to make people feel bad. The people that take pleasure in other people's pain, well, there's a time and place for that, but people who take pleasure in other people's emotional pain is very, and it's an unfortunate character flaw. It's an unfortunate personality trait. But they tend to have the most surface friends, you know, not deep friends, but people want to be around them just because that's where the excitement is. That's where all of the drama happens, and not bad drama either. It is, people are there, that's where they get you to do the stuff that you would never normally do, even if they don't do it themselves. They have a way of getting you to do it, and it's exciting. All of these little things that pull you out of your comfort zone are very, very exciting, and so it's hard for me. I don't trust charm. Like, I don't trust charm in people, because that's how they get you, you know? They get you to, you know, you look, you are wearing that suit. That suit is not wearing you. And all of that crap. And then you're like, well, hey, how you doing? And you start a conversation that feels like something. I'm not talking feels like a relationship. It just feels real. When something feels real, you believe it's honest until it's not. But 9 times out of 10, That kind of really smooth charm wants something, even if it's not sex. It wants something. It will get something. It will put you as a pawn on their chessboard of life. And when the time comes to sacrifice you, they will. And I have not come across anybody who I have seen do somebody dirty or do me dirty, I'm not talking relationship-wise, I'm just talking in life, has been charming. That's not to say everybody that I know that's charming has done somebody dirty, you know, because sometimes people are just nice people. But that's a different kind of charm. And maybe I have, like, you know, some kind of weird, spooky discernment, but, you know, this is my whole Prince Charming / Dracula thing. They are gentlemen. They are charming. They are, you know, debonair. They are all of these wonderful things. And one is supposed to be all good things, and one will kill you while you're sleeping.
I think
you know?
You probably have a charm that warns you about the charming.
Or something, you know? And so human evil is hard to discern, you know? When, if you're going to call it evil, bad people are really good at pretending they're not. And then you have those that are just the idiots that are just asses and really give no craps. But again, in my experience, and I'm sure everybody has different experiences, so my disclaimer is I am not speaking for everybody, but in my experience, the ones that are outwardly a-holes, the ones that are just mean-spirited and whatever, are in the most pain. And they refuse to admit it because they can't. For whatever childhood trauma, whatever they're afraid of, whatever weakness they don't want to show, they're in the most pain. Am I saying feel bad for them? No. They not even a little bit. There's no excuse for treating people like subhuman things. If you can't treat a person at least as good as you know, you treat somebody else's dog. You know, I mean, let's face it. I treat my dog a lot better than I treat most people. But somebody else's dog, where you're nice. Oh, hey, how are you? And whatnot. Everybody deserves a smile. There's no reason to walk through your day being a jerk to people. So I think that this book kind of tells us who we are or who we're afraid to be, because it leaves so much to your own thoughts, to your own ideals, to your own perception, to your own darkness, that everybody invariably reads a different book. It's a different story for everybody with the same underlying thing, but it takes us all to different depths. And if your depths run dark like mine, Rack, then it'll take you to a place because it is gloriously written. So any last words for tonight's show?
No, I'm good.
Gonna let me just jibber-jabber.
Yeah, well.
I had her on the board a couple of minutes ago. He's like, "Le boo, sons of bitches," and that just cracked me up. Well, hey, Hatter, I'm glad you can join us. Nice to see you on the board. And thank you, everybody, for reading and joining the conversation. And I do so love the talk that fills up the time when it comes to wonderful topics. And not that I thought that this was, like, the best topic ever, but it just leads to the best conversation, which to me is the best part of doing these shows. Thank you, Rack, for being fabulous. And thank you, Sweet, for showing up on your anniversary, because it feels like Christmas. And AP, even though you recorded for me, you showed up anyway and started my show with a bang. And Deb, you came to visit and hang out with your fabulous perspective. And for the first time, there was Allie, which is amazing. So I'm so glad she got to hang out with us. And Jay dropped, like, the most fabulous high poem with its own underlying inaudible soundtrack, which was magic. So it was a fabulous show all around. So I will see you guys next time, and thank you so much for sharing time. Good night, all. Good night, Rack.
Get the fuck out of here.
Exactly. Good night.
Good night. Thank you for using Blog Talk.